Jones, Senior Editor for Critical Eye. At our recent Chair and Ned retreat, I was fortunate to sit down with two experienced senior independent directors, Natalie Seeney and Maria Darby Walker. We talked through a range of topics, which you'll hear in the podcast. It was a fantastic discussion and opportunity to get some more insights on the unique role that SIDS have to play in the boardroom. So please enjoy this episode of Critical Eye's Inspiring Leaders podcast. Welcome to Critical Eye's Inspiring Leaders podcast. In this series, we'll be speaking to executive and non-executive directors about what's really going on in boardrooms today, getting insights into the key issues around strategy, stakeholder management, leadership capability, and board dynamics. Today, we're coming to you from our Chair and Ned retreat, where we've been discussing what's on the minds of independent directors in relation to technology, stakeholder management, and board effectiveness. Sharing their thoughts, we have Natalie Seeney, Chair of Cash Access UK, Senior Independent Director of LV, REM Chair at Anglian Water and Ned at Openreach, as well as REM Chair at Spire as well. Joining Natalie, we have Maria Darby Walker, who is currently Senior Independent Director at Personal Group PLC and Redwood Bank. Alongside her board roles, Maria is also an investor in the Manchester-based e-commerce fashion business Sosanda, which is also listed on AIM, and a visiting fellow at Oxford University. I thought it'd be great to start with some thoughts and reflections on the retreat so far. Natalie, I appreciate you've been in a panel this morning, so any thoughts sort of on the keynote and your roundtable on technology would be really interesting to hear from you on that.
I mean, I thought the keynote was inspiring, and we've all been grappling, I think, on boards with just the unprecedented level of change. And hearing somebody say, actually, this could be as revolutionary as the sort of mindset change that happened in the 60s, actually crystallised for me a lot of what's going on and makes a lot of sense. Doesn't make me feel better, but it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, I agree with Natalie. It was a fantastic keynote speech by Mark Curtis at Accenture. And I think, as Natalie said, it crystallises probably a lot of the things that we're both dealing with at board level. And one of the things that resonated with me was how he talked about globally how businesses have dropped the ball with customers, and they're not spending enough time putting themselves in sort of the shoes of the other person, as it were, the shoes of the customer. And I think that's a really important message to make. And, you know, he talks about things like inflation and shrinkability of products and the fact that consumers notice that stuff. And he quoted one example where another board member had said that, you know, they've got to the end of the tenure of, we can't raise prices anymore, we can't change the product anymore. And so I think businesses are really going to have to think very strongly now about, you know, getting it right.
Great, thank you both for your initial thoughts on that. And we're going to take a look at the senior independent director role on the whole. So I guess, Maria, if we can come to you, what do you see the primary responsibilities and the duties for the SID, and are there any nuances around those responsibilities? I know you're both more weighted to the financial services sector, so it'd be interesting to hear from you on that.
Okay, thanks. So I think the SID is a really interesting role. It's super important in terms of the relationship of the NEDs and the chair, the CEO and chair. So I find it a great role. I think you always have to have your antenna on in terms of observing moods, thoughts, feedback. Obviously the SID spends, you know, lots of time with the chair. I think the relationship there's got to be quite respectful of each other, mutually respectful, so that you can give them feedback, which they may not always want to get, but it's in their best interest that sometimes you kind of tell it how it is. And also to help make the board more effective, I think. And Natalie did a great session this morning on board effectiveness, and I think the SID has got, you know, a super role to play in that, in terms of making sure that the board runs as effectively as possible. In terms of financial services, I don't think the role would differ that much from other sectors, but obviously the regulator takes more of an interest, and therefore it's a specific senior management function, so it's an SMF 14 that you have to be kind of given clearance by the regulator for that. And they do spend a bit of time kind of sense checking how much time you've got to spare to do the roles that you have, particularly the SID roles. So they will dive into that a little bit. And obviously the regulator is another key stakeholder. But I think that's probably where the differences end, really. I think in terms of the nuances, they're very similar to other sectors.
I agree entirely. And I think I say it's also an odd role in the sense that when things are going well, it's almost invisible. When things are going badly, actually the SID has to be the person who sometimes takes control. They've got to be the person who the board trusts to step in if the chair falls under a bus, or the person who formally has the responsibility to change the chair. So there's some personality traits, I'd say, you need to be a SID. Certainly being a bit nosy and having your antennae always on is key, but also being willing to essentially stand up for what needs to be done when others might want to run away.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I think I prefer curious to nosy.
Curious sounds
curious
good.
Curious, but no, you're absolutely right. And I think always having those conversations with your fellow NEDs and execs, kind of checking in, mm-hmm. Just to get the mood of the nation, really, and that we're, you know, there's nothing that's going to kind of send us off course. Mm-hmm. And so I think, as you say, as Natalie says, when things are going well, the SID can be relatively quiet and calm whilst keeping the antenna on. The moment things get fractious, then you're definitely at the forefront, and you can find yourself thrust into the position of having to step up. I mean, I've had to step up temporarily when one of my chairs was ill, so I had to chair the AGM with very short notice from the night before.
Likewise.
Yes. I think COVID played a bit of a role in this, where they kept presenting the same COVID test. But anyway, so you do get tested, obviously, chair meetings if something happens, which is super important. But also, if there's something longer term and you have to step in on that interim basis, you've then got to decide what's right for the business. If it is your chair's ill or something like that, you know, will he or she be coming back? The SID will then have to be involved in kind of looking at the recruitment for a potential successor. So you always have an eye on what's right for the business at that moment in time. Mm. So it does become a very kind of important role at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like you have to have that agility sort of running through at all times.
Yes, I think that's right. Yeah.
Great, thank you. In terms of the business as usual duties of the SID, what would you sort of identify those as being, and how do you think that sort of differs from the usual sort of NED role, would you say?
I mean, the SID does have some formal responsibilities. The key ones really are about appraisal of the chair, making sure that the NEDs all feedback, that you are that sounding board to the chair, but also you're the person that can say things to the chair about how they're doing. Constantly keeping an eye on, have you got the right chair? That is a business as usual job. Keeping strong relationships going with shareholders is another core responsibility, again, so that you've got the mood of what's going on. Often it's the chair and SID who will go to key meetings together for that reason. And the SID is often the person who also leads the board evaluation, again, being the person who just makes sure the board is functioning. Mm. And that BAU relationship that Maria talked about of needing to just check in with everyone, again, that is a routine part. I mean, the SID is formally meant to have at least one meeting a year with all the NEDs without the chair there, which is an important part of routine governance. I've also always had regular dinner or catch up with the CEO, again, just to check in on, is the relationship working? Is there anything I'm picking up that hasn't been picked up through other channels?
Yes, yeah, you mentioned that in your panel. I thought that was really interesting and so simple, but such an effective sort of, I guess, technique in keeping those relationships going and keeping them the conversation happening as well. Maria, we've talked about the business as usual sort of side of it. What about the business unusual aspects of the SID role? Where do those responsibilities sort of differ, would you say?
I think that tends to come to the fore when you have a board that starts not to be functional. Mm. And that may be a breakdown in relationship between, say, the CEO and the chair, or it may be a difference around strategy. So it could be the whole board's in disagreement on what the way forward is. And I think it's up to the SID then to kind of, you know, corral views and step up and be more visible, and then really start to decide with other NEDs or with the executives, for example, what that correct course of action might be. Are things reparable? Can you act as kind of mediator and broker between the CEO and chair? Or is it more fundamental than that? And actually, one of those two individuals is going to have to go because the relationship is not working in a way that's working best for the business. So I think that's when you kind of end up in the limelight. And of course, that's why it's important, as Natalie said, to have all those relationships in place that you can go and have those conversations, whether it's with the shareholders or it could be a regulator or with the executives and with your fellow NEDs, just to make sure that you're kind of stepping up and going in the right direction. And, you know, I think it's important to note that obviously the SID is not there to undo the chair so they can step into their role. You can do that on a temporary basis, but clearly that would be a huge conflict if you thought, actually, you know, that's a great opportunity for me to step up. You're there to do the right thing by the business. And so for me, I have worked in for one institution where the board did become dysfunctional, and therefore my role of kind of corralling next steps became ever more important.
And what were the sort of takeaways when you had that experience for you? What were the sort of key learnings from that?
I think, like everything in life, you learn the hard way. And I had empathy when Natalie was talking this morning about when you're doing things for the first time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think I felt at that moment in time, I didn't quite know where to go sometimes to get to have a sounding board, because your normal sounding boards are in the room and you can't do that because you're talking about them as personalities. Mm-hmm. And so knowing where to go to get sensible advice, whether it's legal advice or just talking to someone who's been there, done it before, I think that is really helpful. I chose not to go down that route, and I chose to step away from the business because I just didn't think that things were repairable at that moment in time. And I think that's a choice all NEDs have to make, is you either try and fix what's there and find a solution, but actually if it gets too far, then I think sometimes you have to kind of say, you know, it's over, and that was my decision at that moment in time.
Great. I can see you nodding enthusiastically there.
No, I agree. And at the moment of crisis, it can be quite lonely because by definition, the people around you are in conflict and you've sort of got to chart a way through. Certainly when I've been through difficult times, as I said, I have relied on people I've worked with in other organisations as sounding boards. Everybody's always been generous with their time. And actually, in the case where I had the biggest challenge, which was when I was SID of LB, mm-hmm. the regulator was superb. And being able to pick up the phone with the regulator and go, look, I've got this dilemma, how strongly do you feel about these things? They were excellent, as were colleagues.
Agree.
I think it's like anything else in life as well, is not to have any surprises if you can possibly help it. So. Having that relationship with the regulator where you can go and use, as you say, use them as a bit of a sounding board, but also tell them about the direction of travel.
Absolutely.
Means then they have the trust and faith in you that you're trying to handle things in an appropriate way. And they've seen lots of things before as well, so they can give input and not necessarily advice and guidance on how to run the business. That's not their role.
No.
But they have seen it and done it before, so you won't be the first person going to have that conversation with them.
Yeah, and it's really also about testing their appetite,
which is helpful.
Yeah,
I agree. And it's, yeah, having those external sort of references as well, as you say, it must be very, very useful, as you say, because it can be quite an isolating role as a SID, so having those things to draw upon, absolutely. Thank you. And for you both, what are the sort of red flags that the relationship between the chair and the CEO might not be in the right place on a board? We did touch upon shareholders, but are there sort of investors, shareholders, stakeholders, something to be mindful of as well in these conversations?
I mean, it can be any element of board dynamics that goes wrong. It can be CEO versus chair. It can also be a CEO and chair being dominant and the rest of the board not being heard.
Mm-hmm.
It can be one or two members of the board or certain investors or activists who have a problem with the board direction that can cause friction. It can be disrespectful behaviour in the boardroom, which can fracture board. There are a whole series of red flags. And sometimes human behaviour is, if people feel uncomfortable, they just back off, which is why that SID role of being curious, keeping in touch with people, to test when people are saying, you know, I'm not comfortable with this direction, but can I just tell you what I'm thinking? And find those things early.
Yeah.
In all the times where I've seen boards go wrong, had the issues been picked up earlier, I'm pretty confident they could have got solved. And in all of those cases, you look back and think, where was the SID?
Right.
Now, they may not have all got solved, But in most cases, I saw things fester for too long to the point where they became unrescuable. Mm-hmm. So that sort of early intervention, I think, is really key.
I think I would agree with that. And on the one example that I had where the board stopped functioning, it was because the chair at a particular moment in time, or during his tenure, he was a nice person, but he wanted to avoid conflict. And like anything in life, that's quite unhealthy. It becomes unhealthy when you're in a difficult or a crisis situation. And therefore, issues kind of get swept under the carpet. And I think being SID, you have to be prepared to, in a good way, to confront and be ready to have some of those difficult conversations, which is not always easy or straightforward. No. But if you don't have them, you know, potentially no one else is going to. And so you do it for the greater good, really. And I agree with Natalie, you know, there could be all kinds of red flags that land bad behaviour. Dominant behaviour is really not acceptable in the boardroom. And I've seen a certain amount of that, and you have to kind of call it out, really. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things I also do is I will quite often go and talk to the CFO to get their views on what's going on between the CEO and the chair in a good way, because obviously on all of my boards, the chairs and CEOs, as you would expect, speak regularly once a week or more if there's something of a particular issue that's happening. But what you want to make sure of is that they're not acting as an executive chair and kind of, rather than guiding gently, are telling or advising the CEO what they want them to do. And so I quite often do a sense check with the CFO, because they're closer to the executive day by day to see what's going on and hear the outputs of those conversations, that there's no red flags waving that we may need to think about.
Oh, really? A good HRD is also quite useful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, I think that's definitely,
it's quite Machiavellian, I think. I'm feeling Machiavellian as we're talking about this. It's
I think it's about having your antennae out, isn't it?
Yeah.
And just making sure all those factors are weighed in and you're sense checking constantly. Is it okay?
I think a strong EQI is quite good in this space, actually. You have to be able to read the room and read language and body language and everything else. You have to have that.
That's what I was going to ask you. If you know, it's having that sort of sixth sense almost in the body language, and that tells you so much, I suppose, in the room.
Yeah.
It is, but some of it is basic, actually. If you call another Ned and say, "How are you feeling?" they'll generally tell you. And if SIDS just routinely did that, I think we'd have fewer board failures.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I think, I mean, I chair REM on both of my boards as well, and therefore that is often a route into different kinds of conversations, because you're quite often obviously calling about the next meeting that's coming up, or you know, something you want either their backing on or a discussion on, and then you can kind of segue into other conversations about, you know, how are things going from your perspective, if there's been a change of leadership, you know, just doing a check-in. And so having open those channels of communication and doing that regularly is really key, and that's why you build rapport and have the relationships where they trust you as well to be able to have those open conversations, because if you don't get on, they don't trust you, it's going to be very hard to kind of, you know, move forward with whatever the particular issue happens to be. So I find that a useful way of kind of just meandering around a situation rather than kind of going in directly and going, "What do you think about?" And I do that with shareholders as well. It's a good way in to talk about REM and then meander.
And I totally agree, and I do exactly the same. And I'm also REM chair. And actually, I think the SID REM chair combination really can work for that reason. It gives you a reason to be in front of people.
Yeah.
And particularly shareholders. Most of the relationships I've had with shareholders in the SID role have been absolutely through the lens of REM.
Yeah.
Excellent, thank you. We have touched upon this already about the SID being, or possibly being, the natural successor to the chair. I think really I'd like to know from your perspectives sort of how important it is to normalise these discussions early around succession. And while obviously this discussion might happen with the execs through the NomCo, does it happen with the chair and NEDs? And what's the role of the SID in that dynamic, Natalie?
I think there's a couple of questions in there. So maybe if I do succession first, but then come to the role of the SID. Actually, I think succession for boards is now quite well understood and well executed. And in fact, there's no boards I sit on which don't do this. Yeah. The nice thing about NEDs is we have fixed terms, and actually planning should be relatively easy, certainly easier than for exacts. And all the boards I work with have the classic sort of skills matrix. When someone's coming to step down, the NOMCO will look at what skills are needed. The nice thing about chair succession is you know what their term is and you can plan ahead. Mm-hmm. The complexity often about chair succession is you don't want to change the chair and the CEO in the wrong order and all at the wrong time.
Right.
But my view is it's the chair who flexes there, not the CEO. So you want to get the chair succession done before you appoint the new CEO. So I think the succession thing is unless you've got a crisis, actually relatively mm-hmm. straightforward. I think Maria said it very well earlier. If the SID aspires to be the chair, I think you've got a problem. Because everybody on the board needs to trust that SID will be objective and try and rescue things, not try and oust the chair.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen cases where actually the SID has ended up becoming the chair, but I've never seen it work where it's been their aspiration.
Right.
It's worked because actually, and in one case, the SID said, I really shouldn't do it, but the rest of the board said, we'd like you to,
yeah.
and it is in the right interest of the company.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if the SID aspires to do it in that company, that actually is a direct conflict and problematic.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the SID skills are very good at learning to be a chair, but for a different organisation.
Right, exactly. It's sort of the overlap is difficult there to navigate, I suppose. Maria,
yes, no, I think that's right. And if I look at, for example, the succession plan that we've done on my bank board, you know, I'm there as short-term interim chair if something were to happen to my chair or you know whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The point being that I will hold the ship together and then work with the chief executive on recruiting the next chair if for some reason my current chair had to exit, you know, suddenly for whatever reason. So Natalie's right, we look at, you know, every role, we look at timing on that particular board, for example, we all arrived at the same time, so you can't have us all leaving at the same time. So you do have those regular conversations, I think, under NOMCO, and I think they're really helpful to have. It really highlights, I think, who you've got further down the organisation as well in terms of other people we can bring up, coach, mentor, to bring up in terms of next layers, or actually do we have a skills gap that, you know, we need to go outside and fill that. But no, Natalie's right, it's great learning. As a SID, you get loads of experience, but I think if you're sort of constantly looking at, you know, can I push the chairman off a cliff? I don't think that's
yeah.
appropriate, really. So, great experience, but only for a short term mm-hmm. if you're in the business that you're in, unless, as you say, you get proposed for whatever reason.
Right, great, thank you both. And for sort of NEDs who have aspirations to become senior independent directors in the future, what sort of advice would you give to them for stepping up into that role?
Well, I think it's, as I said at the outset, I think it's a really interesting role to have. I think if they're willing to, you know, do some of the difficult conversations, be that collaborative person with the radar, so I think they have to be a good person at stakeholder engagement across the piece, really, to be able to do that. So I think that goes as part of that remit. I know there's I think it's an informal code rather than anything that's written in the corporate governance code, but I think in the FTSE 350, for example, and beyond, there is a kind of a mandate, which is if you have a male chair, CFO and CEO, then the next role, which is SID, has to be female. And I think a lot of smaller organisations, ones that are coming up and growing, look to that kind of corporate governance code and say, actually, it's good practice and it's good behaviour. So. So there are roles there for women if there's kind of male-dominated presence in the boardroom. But I would say, yes, it's good practice, good skills for thinking about becoming a chair if that's kind of the ultimate ambition.
I agree, thank you.
I agree with all that. And I'd add, I mean, the SID does have to know quite a lot about governance and has to be respected by the board. So it's unlikely to be a first NED role.
Yes.
And I'd argue you really have to have done a committee chair first, just to really understand board dynamics and influencing around a board table, which is not necessarily the same as influencing in other environments.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd agree with Maria about some of the personality traits. You have to be someone who's willing to stick your head above a parapet and spot a difficult situation and call it out, but with diplomacy to work out how you resolve things.
Mm-hmm.
The diplomatic skills are key. And someone who can talk to a chair and give them feedback and is prepared to to have those conversations and really build that trust with a chair.
One of my chairmen has given me permission to be horrible to him, which I quite like, because he said, "You're too nice, be horrible." I said, "Okay, fine, be careful what you wish for." Yeah. So that's fine. But it's in his best interest, so, you know. So
no, let's be frank.
It absolutely matters. I mean, yeah. with where I'm a SID, I speak to my chairman at least once a fortnight, yeah. often once a week, and if he hasn't heard from me for a week, I'll get a call going, "Well, I haven't heard. How's it? How's everything?" And that desire from a chair to want feedback is important. If you've got a chair who doesn't want to hear bad news, that mm-hmm. is more difficult for a SID.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Great. Well, excellent. Thank you so much. There's some great takeaways there. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. But thank you so much to my guests, Maria Darby-Walker and Natalie Sini. If you want to find out more about Critical Eye's Inspiring Leaders podcast, you can find all of the episodes either on Podbean or Spotify. Thanks so much. Thank you.